this is Miriam Seidel, and I'm speaking with the artist Diane Burko in her studio. Hi, Diane.
Hey, Miriam. How are you?
I'm great. Diane has been producing a series of really compelling art in the form of landscape paintings and photographs. The most recent work is called Polar Investigations, and it addresses issues of climate change. Her work has been shown in many museums and galleries, and she's received numerous awards. And you can see more at her website, dianeburko.com. So let's just start talking. Diane,
okay.
So you really walk the walk. You are committed to this thing, and you have actually traveled to Greenland, to Norway, to Antarctica, Patagonia, to see what's happening with the glaciers. I think I should almost call you an artist adventurer, but what made you feel like you really had to get out there?
Well, I needed to experience it myself, Miriam. When I first started this project, which was way back in 06, I was using other people's material. I was using amazing repeat photography, photographs by scientists, the National Ice and Data Center, USGS. And what they have been doing as geologists is tracking how things changed visually. So I found all these photographs of glaciers spanning over 100 years, and that was fascinating to me, and that was my first project. But after a while, I just needed to see them for myself.
Mm-hmm. So it was kind of almost like a pilgrimage the first time?
Yeah, it really was. And actually, I had done a series on Glacier National Park in Montana. Specifically, I was really taken by Grinnell Glacier, which has totally changed. I did four huge paintings on it, I think spanning from 1960 to 2010. And that was close enough for me to get to. So after I did the series, I said, you know, I got to get there. And so I went out there, flew in a helicopter, climbed, and experienced it. And I guess, you know, I couldn't stop after that. One glacier wasn't enough.
That's great. So what got you originally to start working on these images that relate to climate change?
Well, it was in a bit serendipity, or maybe it's organic. I think artists are questioners, and you know, we get stimulated by what we see, but we also think. And I was having an exhibition at the Michener Museum in 06, and it was all about my trip to Iceland and volcano project I had done about 3 or 4 years before.
Right, because you've actually done a lot of landscape work that involved going to the places.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Taking aerial pictures.
Exactly. Aerial. I've been, that's the way I've made my landscape for the past 40 years. Mm-hmm. What was so different about this project is when I first started doing it, I wasn't going. I was using other people's material because, you know, who thought of going to a glacier when I first began?
Yeah.
So as I was saying, at this museum show, there was a very early painting from 1976 of, believe it or not, an alpine scene. It was French Alps. So ironically, I had painted these blue paintings of mountains way back in the early part of my career. And I think that got me started. You know, it was like that painting was done in 76, and this show was 30 years later. It made me think about those mountains and question what's going on now.
And certainly things had changed.
Absolutely. And they changed on all levels. You know, I got 30 years older. Things were going on. And also, if you think of the year 2006, that was the year that Gore did The Inconvenient Truth.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah. And not only that, there was also Elizabeth Colbert's book.
Which I'm sure you were aware of.
It was all in the air. I had read her book.
Kind of crystallizing.
Exactly. You know, I mean, her articles were appearing in the New Yorker before the book came out in 06, but it was all there, you know, swirling, and it was in my subconsciousness, and then it became my consciousness, and I just knew I had to find out more about this issue, and that's how I discovered all those repeat photographs on the internet.
That's great. And those, I guess, were grappling with that issue of how do you show something that's changing over a long period of time?
Right.
How do you get that across to people?
Exactly.
And now, with your newest series, the photographic series that you call Deep Time, you're using juxtaposition, but in a different way, to get people sort of into that geological versus historical thing. So why don't you talk about that a little?
Wow, that's a very good, you're right. I didn't think of it that way, but it is another pairing. But I just want to mention, even before, you know, there was something in between doing these repeats and then doing this very current project. And that was by learning more about geology, I learned more about how these scientists track and measure things. And they use another device called recessional lines. Mm-hmm. And so I started integrating these recessional lines into my paintings. What's a recessional line? Well, it shows you where a glacier was in 1880, 1980. And what you see, without a doubt, with, you know, not every glacier in the world, but a large majority, is that they are definitely receding more than they are advancing. Mm-hmm. And these lines would indicate that. So as an artist, I was looking for whatever visual cue I could find to communicate this idea, but yet still remain an artist.
Great. So so now let's talk a little bit about the Deep Time series.
Right. Okay, thank
which
you.
Which comes out of your last trip.
That's right. That's right. The last trip I took was this past January 2015. It started by being an educator on a nonprofit expedition called Students on Ice out of Canada. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend it to anyone, young students. These were college students. And we did the peninsula. But after that, my husband was with me as well. And we made this plan of going to Ushuaia, landing in Ushuaia, and then flying to El Calafate, which is on the Argentinian side of the ice fields. And then we visited three glaciers, which were incredible, especially the trek that I made over the Viedma Glacier. That was really amazing.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. So you were taking pictures not only of the ice, but also of rock faces.
Well, yeah, you're right. It was basically, you know, to photograph these amazing glaciers and especially Viedma, which was so spectacular in terms of the colors and the undulations and the formations. But as we were doing that, especially in Patagonia, I also found at another glacier, actually, not Viedma, Uppsala Glacier, we had to climb up a mountain with jeeps to look down on this glacier. And while we were up there, we found these rocks that had seabed fossils in them. So that made me, you know, start thinking about geology. Hey, you know, that used to be down below, and here it is, a mountain. And we also found fossils in other areas. So when I got back to the studio or to the computer, I reviewed and edited a lot of my Viedma stuff. And then I just came up, I don't know how it happened, but with this realization, gee, what if I paired, as you said before, the current time, which was just my time in January, with deep time, with geological time, because I not only had images from Patagonia, but I had collected images from granite bedrock in Greenland in 2014. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of these images, and I realized there was a way to maybe tell another story or tell the story another way, where you paired the left with deep and the right with the current, and the current is melting, and it's about the very organic forms. They sort of refer to the body. Uh-huh. So you can think of the body as mortal. That it
We looked at them, and they look. I was saying they look like frozen liquid. Really, they're so curvy. And this brings me to thinking about time. You know, and how you as an artist make these decisions to try and show these different timescales. And you know, yes, it's now the melting of the glaciers is now happening impossibly fast, out of the scale of geology. But it's also, but in terms of people's experience, in terms of people's understanding, it's not fast enough for them to take it
exactly.
in.
Exactly, exactly. Right. And things, you know, they talk about glacial time being this historical thing. That, I think, is the core problem of trying to convince the public. That's what the crucial nut that we have to crack, really.
Yeah.
How do you get the public to understand, to wrap their minds around something that doesn't happen instantly, and especially today when everything happens instantly. But this is a concept that is going to kill us. It's going to destroy the planet if we don't try to comprehend something that happens outside of our lifetime, longer than one lifetime. And that's what geology is all about.
Right, right. And it's called upon us to try and understand it and try to convey it as
right,
well.
Right, right.
So I was going to ask you about, because I know you're still painting.
Yes.
I've followed your paintings for many years.
Oh, God, yes. You wrote a review about my work. When was that?
Yeah.
In Art News?
Maybe 20 years ago.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. At least. Yeah, yeah.
And I see in your studio that you have freshly made paintings, and you're in the paintings also trying to grapple with this issue.
I am. And so. It's not easy because, you know, I am at heart, I think, I'm a painter. I've always been a painter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my language. So I'm trying to find a way to use my language in a fresh way
mm-hmm.
that also has another layer of purpose in it. That does somehow communicate it. It can even happen just in the titles. But lately, as you see in these paintings that we're looking at, you have this box here with this Alulaset series. And so I've inset a box that is about the actual map of Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this close-up of Alulaset or Jakobshavn Glacier, the fastest-moving glacier in the Northern Hemisphere. And I'm trying to elicit that concept, that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So if I juxtapose this painting with the one over here, which has the recessional maps, and you have this third one over here that's Landsat map, that's a satellite map, you know, you visually start seeing repetitions of shapes,
right,
forms, and hopefully you get the picture.
That's so interesting, yeah, because it seems like we need to get two things next to each other,
yeah,
and that maybe helps people jump out of the box of their single understanding of something.
Yeah,
so
and their complacency.
Yeah, totally.
And but you know, I'm doing it with an art audience, so you would hope that they have a little, you know, they might look at it more. But
mm-hmm.
you know, I really want to reach other audiences, quite frankly.
Right. So I know that you've been going to conferences where you address scientists and share your, like, more aesthetic approach to this.
Right, yeah.
What else?
We
went to the climate march.
We did. Wasn't that
together?
Amazing? 400,000 people.
That was,
it was just
yeah.
so energizing. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and you remember, I saw Marco Tedesco there. I couldn't believe it. This is a scientist that I first met at an AGU conference. AGU, by the way, Miriam, means American Geophysical Union. And
mm-hmm.
this is the largest international group of earth scientists, I guess, in the world. And they meet in San Francisco every year. And I was honored to be invited to be on a panel there in 2012. And the panel was about how artists communicate science.
Mm.
And believe me, I am not the only artist doing this. There are myriads of us all trying to communicate in, you know, biology, all kinds of sciences, because, you know, we have a different take on it. We see
mm-hmm.
it visually. And scientists appreciate what we're doing because some of them have trouble communicating what they do.
Right.
You know, they're not verbal
right.
people. They're
right.
A lot of them are in their laboratories. They're looking at their graphs. And they understand that a graph is not as convincing as a painting that you can stand in front of and have an emotional connection with,
right.
and know that the hand made it.
The hand made it. And another thing I was just thinking is that your brushstrokes are very alive, and they're like that moving water and that flowing ice. And
yeah,
it gives,
sometimes.
It,
yeah.
You know, maybe
yeah.
it gives people a way.
It gives them a
too.
Way in. I mean,
yeah.
I still remember being on a panel at Princeton at the Wilson School, where I had an exhibition, and someone in the audience said, I don't know why you have to make paintings of these photographs, because
mm-hmm.
this was in the early part of my project where I was doing these compare and contrast photographs. And, you know, he just sort of like came I sort of took me aback, and before I could say anything, someone in the audience stood up and they said, because when you see a painting, you get emotionally attached. It's not the same thing as a black and white photograph.
Yeah.
And the guy was right. And I said, of course, I agree. But it's true.
And I think you had said something to me once
yeah.
about how looking at a painting slows you down.
Yes.
Or something.
Yes, it does. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
a photograph, you immediately, it's the information is there. You get it.
Right.
And but you know, and we're in a world of photography now. Images are all over, you know, Instagram, Pinterest, everything. Everything is an image. So if indeed a person does walk into an art gallery, it might slow them down. They
yeah.
have to take in the whole piece, and I always believe, you know, when I taught, I always said this, you have to look at art from many distances. So they can walk in and see something that looks like a glacier, but if you really walk up close, it becomes something else.
Right. And your paintings tend to be large.
Yes,
so
they
that
do.
Somebody can get that feeling of being enveloped in
exactly.
The,
in and that's what I want that. I think that that's part of it. That's part of the scale issue.
Great.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, I must interrupt you because I was just at the Rothko Chapel, and there's a Rothko quote. I think maybe I read it at the Menil collection. I can't remember. But basically I saw a Rothko retrospective, and it was in that show. He says that the reason he paints large, he said large is intimate, small is not, because by painting large, you're intimately involved with the piece because you are enveloped in it. Just what you just said.
Yeah,
that was a Rothko concept.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I always had this feeling with those big abstract paintings like Rothko.
Or Pollock.
Yeah, and Morris Lewis is one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
That there's something about how it connects you with your whole body.
Totally.
Because it's at
physical.
Least as big as your body.
Right.
So,
or
you know,
bigger.
From your feet to your head, you're engaged with that.
Yeah, you're engaged. And that's the key word.
Yeah. So
you have to get the public engaged with this issue in any way you can.
Right. Well, I wish you luck with your communicating about this issue.
Thank you.
Through your artwork.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.